Things need not have happened to be true. Tales and dreams are the shadow truths that will endure when mere podcasts are dust and ashes and forgot. But let us not forget that this geek history lesson on Neil Gaiman's The Sandman is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Dream Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or I don't know what this family is called, in popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. And there's a Sandman show, so we're talking about Sandman.
That's right. There is a brand new live action The Sandman series that is going to premiere on August 5th on Netflix. And so I thought, let's take a deep dive into one of the most critically beloved comic book series of all time. Now, if you are a fan of our podcast, or if you're new, hello, welcome. But if you are a fan of our podcast, this will be very similar to our Expanse episode that we did, because I'm not going to tell you every single thing that happens in Sandman. You should pull out an award-nominated book, and you should read it. But also, what this is going to do is it's going to give you a taste of the Sandman world. I'm going to give you some basic characters. I'm going to give you enough a sense of where the show might be going, because I want to excite you to check out this new show. I want to excite you so that you read this new series, because you should read Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, because it is no hyperbole, no exaggeration. It is one of the greatest comic book series of all time. Let me repeat that. Neil Gaiman's The Sandman is one of the greatest comic book series of all time, full stop. Thoughts, Ashley?
I read like half of the first volume.
Yes, and this should excite you to read the rest.
Yes.
Luckily, this was suggested by some listeners of ours way back in the fan topic list from a long time ago. Lorenzo Manning, Stephen Wright, and Hunter Cagle suggested this lesson to us.
So where I have TAs this episode.
Yes, and where can future TAs suggest their lessons?
They can do that at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, on Instagram at geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHLpodcast.
All right, let's hop into the 10 cent origin.
That is the first part of the podcast where Professor Jason is going to tell you all the basics, who's its and what's its, in case you ever go to a Neil Gaiman-themed cocktail party and somebody dressed as Crowley doesn't know what Sandman is.
It's dressed as Crowley?
Yeah.
You're kind of mixing the streams here.
It's a Neil Gaiman character?
Yes.
I said, but if it was a Neil Gaiman cocktail party.
Okay, got it. Sorry. All right, cool. Ashley making the Good Omens reference, and I was like, Good Omens does not cross over with the Sandman at all. They are completely separate universes. The Sandman was published by DC Comics from 1989 to 1993. It was published by Vertigo in various ongoing series and miniseries through Vertigo from 1993 to 2020. It was a monthly comic book. It was described as a dark fantasy supernatural horror / superhero book. The specific series are The Sandman, which was published from January 1989 to March 1996. The Sandman, The Dream Hunters, which was published in 1999. The Sandman Overture was published in October 2019 to November 2015. Now, these are like sort of there are other spinoffs. There are other things like this, but these are the specific The Sandman ones, because there are like the Dreaming books. There are other spinoffs. We'll talk loosely about some of them, but mainly focus on the Sandman series. The main Sandman series had 75 issues, and the main character was Dream of the Endless. It was created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Dreigenberg, I believe, written by Neil Gaiman, penciled by various artists, inked by various artists, and it was lettered by Todd Klein and John Costanza. All right, let's get to the meet cute. What's that, Ashley?
That is the second part of the podcast where we stole a term from romantic comedy writing, and we tell you the first time we met these characters and how cute it was.
Now, Ashley, when did you first hear of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman? And then my follow-up question is, when did you first attempt to read and stop it?
I have no idea when I first heard about The Sandman. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you were born after 1989, mm-hmm. And you were into comics and geek stuff, Sandman was always
Sandman.
Kind of in mm-hmm. the ethos. I feel like I've always kind of known about Sandman. I knew people who started reading it when I was in high school. I tried to read it in 2012. A friend of mine lent me the first volume and then he moved to Missouri and I've never seen him again. So I think I threw his first volume in the trash or sold it.
I hope you donated it. I hope you didn't throw it in the trash. Don't throw books in the trash.
I have no idea because I don't remember when I got rid of it, but I know I don't currently own it. Okay. So I tried it then. I got like halfway through the first volume and all I really remember is there was a guy stuck in a snow globe or there was a snow globe and a house. That's most of what I remember about Sandman. It's very slow.
Well, remind me later, the snow globe, it's not a snow globe. It's sort of a prison cell, and we will talk about it in a bit.
Well, when I read it, I thought it was a snow globe. Mm-hmm. So that was the last time, and I've been meaning to go back and read it because I know Jason read it a few years ago and found a system that worked too, because it does have—
More than a few years ago, actually, but yes.
Yes, but it does admittedly have a slow start.
Yes.
So what was your make cute for Sandman?
I mean, of course, for mine, this is a very classic Jason Inman origin, Wizard Magazine, because Wizard Magazine would talk about the Sandman all the time, just like most people. They say, you should read the Sandman, you should read the Sandman. I attempted and stopped reading the Sandman about three times. Mm-hmm. No, twice. I started and stopped once, started and stopped the second time. And then I finally found out that the system worked for me was I said, I was like, I need to read this because everybody talks about it. I'm going to read only one issue a day until I'm done. And I found by doing that, it worked very well. I think it does have a slow start. We will talk a little bit about why that was.
Yeah.
There's a lot to The Sandman. Uh-huh. And we're going to cover it all here because it's a very important Vertigo comic books. Because the legacy of Vertigo comic books is very important as well. And if you want to hear more about that, you should come on over to this week's Geek History Lesson Extra podcast over at patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. We'll be talking about the company that was sort of boistered by the Sandman and made a lot of luminary books like Preacher and Transmetropolitan and Fables and Hellblazer. But not only that, over at the Patreon, we have Marvel Club.
Yeah.
We have Jason and Jeremy John about Justice League. There are 3 bonus pods a month for helping to support this podcast. And there's a Discord. So thanks to everyone that supports us over there, that supports us. You are all dreamy. And for anybody that wants to join in the party, come on over to patreon.com/Jawin. All right, let's get to the history 101. As Dream says to John Constantine once, John Constantine, who is that, Ashley?
He's that bisexual wizard who is ruining the DC universe while trying to be a hero.
Yes. Dream once says to John Constantine, one thing I've learned, you can know anything. It's all there. You just have to find it, which I think is very apropos of this episode. The Sandman falls within the dark fantasy genre, but it's also basically an anthology book where characters enter and exit the story as they cross the path of the main character named Morpheus, aka Dream. So if you hear me talk about Dream, I'm talking about Morpheus, but his concept, his role is Dream. Why is that? Because he is the Lord of Dreams. This series is sprawling, it's complex, it crosses genre. It is very complicated. And that, again, is my whole goal, is that I cannot tell you everything that happens in the series because a lot of it is open to interpretation. But I want you to read it, and I hope by the end of this podcast, you are convinced to check it out or check out at least the new TV series.
Yeah, if you're ever looking at Sandman art and you see a tall, skinny white guy with messy hair who kind of looks like Neil Gaiman, that's who Dream is.
Now, when asked to describe Sandman in under 25 words, here's what series creator Neil Gaiman came up with.
Okay.
This is his description. The Lord of Dreams learns that one must change or die and makes his decision.
Wow, I bet he writes really good previews copies if this is under 25 words.
So basically, Neil Gaiman's The Sandman is a sprawling, dark fantasy that explores humanity through the eyes of a dysfunctional, immortal family known as the Endless.
I knew they had a name.
Who are the Endless? We'll get to them later. If you're still confused, okay, I'll tell you the initial hook of the book. Here we go. The Sandman tells the story of Dream. Who's that again, Ashley?
That white guy who looks like Neil Gaiman.
Now, what's his name that I just told you?
Morpheus.
Thank you. Morpheus.
Flint Marco.
Morpheus is the personification of all dreams and stories. Dream can appear pretty much like anything, but he usually looks like a pale, mopey guy with dark eyes and shaggy hair.
Which is kind of what Neil Gaiman looks like.
The story of Sandman begins in 1916 when he is captured and imprisoned by black magic occultists. Here's that, how that happened. On the night of June 15th, 1916, a full moon, of course, British occultist Roderick Burgess and his Order of Ancient Mysteries accidentally summoned Dream while trying to summon and imprison Death. Now, drained from a recent odyssey, Dream was no match for this order of sorcerers, who then stole his ruby, his helm or his mask, and his pouch of items, and held him captive in a crystal prison, or as some people reading the book might think, a snow globe, in the basement of his house in Witch Cross. Burgess hoped Dream could be coerced into setting up a trap for his sister, but Dream refused to speak. Dream's imprisonment leads to worldwide problems. Some people would sleep all day, others couldn't sleep at all, and then some would experience waking dreams. Now, in 1988, the year Gaiman began publishing the series, Dream escapes in real time and spends the remaining issues of the 75-issue series trying to regain control of the dreaming and the powers and items he once possessed. In his absence, the realm of dreams has been disrupted, and he has to spend the entire series basically bringing things back to balance. He has to escape nightmares and dreams. He has to rebuild his castle. And he has to take a journey that basically examines his actions through time to finally know who he is. There's humor. There's action. There's horror. There's love. There's crossovers with Superman and Batman and John Constantine until they decided the series shouldn't cross over the DC universe too much because they were showing too many bare breasts and naked bodies. And they just said, like, forget about that. More on that later.
It's not like Superman has a child.
Yeah, but the Sandman builds out a world where Dream is basically a supporting character in many of the stories that you read. One volume is called The Game of You, and it takes a minor character from a previous volume and spins her off into an elaborate, surreal fantasy narrative. Another one called The World's End takes place at a magical pub where people wait out the storm while swapping one-off stories. Also, Neil Gaiman loves to weave the comic story through actual historical events, like the World Fantasy Award-winning issue, Shakespeare's A Midnight Summer's Dream, where he gives a new origin to that play. In Dream Country, in Sandman Volume 3, there is a one-short where Dream asks William Shakespeare, in case anybody doesn't know who William Shakespeare is, Ashley, you are a William Shakespeare expert. Please explain. Who is Mr. Shakespeare?
The greatest person to ever write the English language. Famous playwright. Also, Jason meant to say Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, my apologies.
And he does know that that is how it is said. So don't tweet at us.
Yes. So Dream asks William Shakespeare and his troupe to perform a Midsummer's Night Dream to a most special audience, Queen Titania and Lord Oberon and their elves. Not only is this short story amazing, that this one small detail, this one single happening, has repercussions for the rest of the entire series. It will resonate with Sandman 400 years later, and it will also resonate to the final issue of the entire series.
Titania also crosses over into the Books of Magic series.
Yes.
In my favorite issue of the series.
Also written by Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
Now, that's the thrust. Mm-hmm. That's the hook of this book. It is Dream trying to put his life back together after spending 80 years imprisoned by humans in a snow globe. It was like a magical dome that inhabited his powers, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the way, I just mentioned A Midsummer Night's Dream. That was The Sandman number 19. It won, as I said, the World Fantasy Award in 1991 for Best Short Fiction. In fact, everybody was not happy that a comic book had won such a prestigious award, and the rules were changed immediately to exclude comics from ever winning the award again, making Sandman number 19 the first and the last comic book that could ever win that award.
Thanks, literary community.
Yeah. Now, Ashley, I want to know, does what I tell you intrigue you or annoy you that Morpheus is a supporting character in his own series, or does that help illuminate why this series took so long to be adapted into live action?
Oh, that's interesting. I would have never considered that.
Morpheus is almost, even though he is the protagonist and he's the named Sandman, is almost a secondary character in this entire series.
Yeah, not based on that trailer. That's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. I think this series is probably going to be a little more Game of Thrones-y, a little more about the drama mm-hmm. of the family. I think that probably has to do with one of the reasons that it took a long time to get it adapted. I also think that it wasn't trendy to adapt comic books until about 10 years ago, which probably had something to do with it. I've known about the Shakespeare issue for a long time. A lot of Shakespearean scholars take a lot of umbrage with the fact that Neil Gaiman sets this story at the wrong time in Shakespeare's career for when Midsummer Night's Dream would have been written. That doesn't bother me necessarily as much, but I would say when I first heard about it, it definitely made me more intrigued to read the series. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Shakespeare appears 3 times in the series.
I do know that he returns, yes.
And there is a bargain that William Shakespeare has with Dream, and that is what specifically resonates with the final issue of Sandman.
When he makes subsequent appearances, do they name check or reference any of his other plays?
Yes.
That's cool.
But I don't want to tell you.
You don't have to tell me.
I'm not going to tell you which ones mm-hmm. because it gives away plot points that I want you to read. All I will say is that Dream is responsible in the world of the Sandman for some of Shakespeare's ideas.
Yes, I did know that.
Yes. It's the idea that, like,
they, God forbid we gave Shakespeare credit for the things he wrote.
No, they introduced this idea because Dream is about dreams mm-hmm. and inspiration. The idea that because of Dream's bargains, a couple of these plays happened that would not have happened otherwise. Like, Dream was the inspiration
yes.
for said play.
Yeah. I mean, I'm betting the Queen Mab speech gets yeah. name checked at some point.
You know, speaking of adaptations, Warner Brothers, HBO, and New Line Cinema all tried to adapt this in 1991. Very early into the series.
Remember when Joseph Gordon-Levitt was attached to this?
That is true. Gaiman.
1991.
Yeah. Gaiman has read numerous scripts mm-hmm. that have tried to adapt this over the years. He claimed one screenplay was not only the worst Sandman script I've ever seen, but quite easily the worst screenplay I've ever read.
Excuse me. L-O-L-O-L.
It wasn't until 2020 that Sandman finally got adapted when it was adapted in the form of an audio version in mm-hmm. the Audible exclusive multi-part audio drama, and then the Netflix version is the first live action.
I believe it was greenlit following the success of Neverwhere, that mm-hmm. audio drama.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the Endless. I talked about them earlier. Who are the Endless? Well, basically, they are Dream's brothers and sisters.
Dream and all his siblings.
The Endless specifically are anthropomorphic, thank you, embodiments of aspects of nature. Mm-hmm. They've existed since the first living being in the universe breathed. It is really hard to describe what they are.
They're gods and goddesses.
Or who they are. Nah, but their ideas, their patterns, their representations.
But in the same way that, right, like Athena represents yes. war or yes. in wisdom. And, mm-hmm. you know, like that's, they're basically gods and goddesses from an original canon.
They are bound by duty to perform their functions. Mm-hmm. And they seem to lack the freedom to escape from their functions. And if they die, they are simply replaced by another aspect of themselves. Mm-hmm. They oversee their own realms and everything connected to them. Now, there are 7 siblings in the Endless, Ashley. One of them is Dream, and all of their names start with D.
Death.
Would you like to make a guess about... So, you know, Dream is one. Yep. Would you like to make the guess of the other 6?
Yes, Death.
That is correct.
Destiny.
Correct.
Despair.
Correct.
Those are the only ones I absolutely know. I'm trying to imagine the character posters. Desire.
Correct. You have two left.
I don't know. I got nothing.
Destruction.
Oh.
And delight / delirium.
Oh, delirium. Yeah.
Well, delirium changes their name to delight later in the series.
Yeah, my brain just keeps showing me the Gwendolyn Christie Lucifer poster. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to tell you about these brothers and sisters of the Endless in the order from oldest to youngest.
Okay.
Destiny.
Destiny.
Destiny is the oldest. He is apparently blind, but some think he is nothing but a vision. He's bound to the Book of the Word. We hardly see Destiny in the Sandman, but when he does make an appearance, life-altering decisions are made. It is said in the series that Destiny leaves no footprints, but he casts also no shadows.
This is the most I've ever learned about these characters, so I am, for my gratification, opening up the IMDb to see who is playing these characters.
Death is next. Now, it is said in the series that every human being sees death twice. Once when they open their eyes, but they have no recollection of it.
They're not all credited on IMDb.
And secondly, when they are about to close them for the last time. Mm. Now, instead of being the Grim Reaper, Death in the Sandman series is a cheerful, gothy young woman. And she's there.
She's cute, man.
She's really cute. She's had multiple spinoff series. I have a feeling that if there is a spinoff in Netflix, then the Sandman series is popular enough, she will be the spinoff, like she was in the comics.
Well, casting her Kirby Howell Baptiste in that part wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. There is Dream. We'll get to Dream mm-hmm. later. So he's the third oldest. Next is Destruction. Oh, yeah. Now, Destruction is AWOL for most of the series.
Mm.
He abandoned his duties in the 17th century when, this happens in the book, but I'm going to tell you about it, when he predicts the construction of the atomic bomb, and he refuses to be a part of it. He is also known as the prodigal. Thank you, Ashley. and he's considered to be the wisest of all the siblings. Destruction once says in this book, "I like the stars. It's the illusion of permanence, I think. I mean, they're always flaring up and caving in and going out. But from here, I can pretend. I can pretend that things last."
Wow.
There are also the twins Despair and Desire. Despair looks into our world via windows from her realm. They appear like mirrors in ours. Sometimes it's said that you will look into a mirror and feel the eyes of despair upon you. You will feel her hook catch and snag into your heart. Despair likes to keep to herself. Now, her twin brother or sister, Desire, the troublemaker of the family and the one who has a rivalry with Dream, Desire is everything you wanted, whoever you are, whatever you want, everything. And then the youngest is called Delirium, used to be called Delight. She comes across as a lost kid, and her appearance is variable, and her eyes are always mismatched. She speaks in riddles as if her mind is not always there. And her realm is open to humans, but it is said that few who have made the journey have been incapable of reporting back even the tiniest fragments of what her realm is like.
So there are three of these characters are not currently credited on IMDb as appearing.
And again, for note, we
three
are
of the endless.
At the time of this recording, we have not seen the Netflix series.
But there are also a slew of actors who have not, whose roles have not been revealed yet on IMDb.
Well, I think there might be some stunt casting.
So I think that's very interesting.
Now, I want to tell you about Dream.
Okay.
Morpheus, our main character. What else can I tell you about the Sandman? Although the story is mostly set in the present day, there are several excursions into the past. Remember, Dream is an immortal being. We see him in Shakespearean times. We see him in ancient Rome. We see him in the U.S. circa the 19th century. We see him in France during the Revolution. There is a particular story that ties into Greek mythology. There is a retelling of the myth of Orpheus, except in this version, Dream is the father of Orpheus. In this version.
Interesting.
It happens in Fables and Reflections, The Sandman, Volume 6. Now, Dream regulates the dreaming, which includes not only dreams and nightmares, but everything related to imagination and inspiration. In his library, for example, there are all the books that were ever dreamed of and thought about, but never came into existence.
Wow.
And among the endless, he seems to be the most serious, except for Destiny, and the most conscious of his function as the embodiment of dreams. He's rather obsessed with responsibilities. He's kind of an unforgiving, strict lord whose actions sometimes seem downright cruel, but the end of these are fueled by his belief of his place in the cosmos and his duties. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times he's like, no. The duty to the dreaming is above everything else. It's above feelings. It's above thought. It's above even my own family members, which kind of rubs people really wrong way in the series.
Yeah.
And it comes back in a lot of ways to bite Dream in the, ethereal ass, if you were to say. It is this belief that has led him to choose the path that he chose and one that has kept him apart from most of his brothers and his sisters. And it sort of made him a terrible and terrifying love to all the paramours that he's had in his life. And also, he is the worst possible father he could ever be to his son Orpheus. He's pretty terrible.
Oh, he's like actually Orpheus's father, not just like for the sake of the story.
In the Sandman universe, he is Orpheus's father.
Hot take. If you're going to pastiche a Greek myth, pick a better one than Orpheus. I'm over it.
Okay.
I don't care for the Orpheus story.
after Sandman's imprisonment, he comes to realize that in many ways he needs to change. And this realization has a serious repercussion throughout the story. There's a choice that needs to be made that may be no real choice at all for a being that has been set among the Endless. And it needs to be made.
Okay.
He has to change his serious ways. Dream is one of the great and tragic heroes that you cannot help but be enthralled by the complexity of his character. And Ashley, I want to ask you, does the character of Dream remind you? I don't have anybody specific in mind. I'm just curious. You have a deep knowledge of literature and comic books. Does Dream remind you of any other protagonists that you know?
A great dreamer who's a bad father?
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Can you name a couple specifically, please?
Odysseus.
Okay.
A terrible father. 0 out of 10. Hector. It's hard because, like, this is a real mythological Arthur. Uther, even in the Arthurian legends. Like, a lot of the great heroes are not good parents. Because it's hard to save the world and give your child the emotional support they need, I suppose.
Well, yes, you are correct. To me, Dream sounds a lot like the heroes of Greek myth and Shakespeare, which makes sense since a lot of the Sandman is influenced by Greek myth and Shakespeare.
Claudius, yeah.
Another quote from The Magic of Sandman, you shouldn't trust the storyteller, only trust the story. So now we're going to talk about how this book came about.
Well, also, is there such thing as a reliable narrator?
No. Here's the production history of The Sandman.
Okay.
The Sandman grew out of a proposal by Neil Gaiman to revive DC's 1974 series, The Sandman, written by Joe Simon and Michael Fleischer, illustrated by Jack Kirby and Ernie Chow. That is actually a series about the second Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell you about the first. Ashley, do you know who the first Sandman was?
The Charleston Comics hero?
No, the Golden Age DC Comics character.
No.
The first Sandman is the Wesley Dodd Golden Age Sandman. He's the Justice Society of America character.
He got goggles.
Who wore a gas mask.
Yeah.
And he shoots sleep gas at people while wearing a fedora in the 1930s.
I think the reason I thought Charleston was because I assumed that he was acquired at the same time as like Blue Beetle.
Nope, he's an original DC character.
Wow, cool. He has a great look. I do know what this character looks like. Yes.
The second is Garrett Sanford. He is a UCLA psychology professor who became trapped in the dream dimension while saving the life of a great man. There's hints that it's a U.S. president, but it's never confirmed, who is in a coma while being terrorized by a powerful nightmare monster.
Cool.
Now, Neil Gaiman had considered including characters from The Second Sandman in a scene for the first issue of his 1988 DC miniseries Black Orchid. While the scene did not make it into later drafts because Roy Thomas was using many of the characters that he wanted to use for Infinity Inc., so Neil Gaiman kind of had to cut all the Sandman references out of that book.
Mm-hmm.
Months later, Karen Berger, a DC editor, and will go on to basically found Vertigo Comics, offered Neil Gaiman a comic title to work on, but he wasn't sure if his Sandman pitch would be accepted. A few weeks later, Berger asked Gaiman if he was interested in doing a Sandman series. Gaiman recalled, I said, and I quote, here we go. I'll give you real note, Gaiman, sorry. Yes, definitely. What's the catch? And Berger said, there's only one. We'd like a new Sandman. Keep the name, but the rest is up to you. And so the third Sandman was born.
Mm.
Neil Gaiman crafted the new character from an initial image of a man, young, pale, and naked, imprisoned in a tiny cell, waiting until his captors died. He would be deathly thin, with long dark hair and strange eyes. Neil Gaiman approached scripting the series became more difficult as complex storyline and characters developed. He said, and I quote, when I began writing Sandman, it would take me a couple of weeks to write a script. As time went by, I got slower and slower until a script was taking me 6 weeks or a month to write. The book originally crossed over with the DC Universe with cameos from John Constantine and Martian Manhunter, but eventually became its own thing, and it became one of the original Vertigo titles. But its coolest DC comic connection is a very neat retcon.
Okay.
Sandman's success prompted the creation of a new title called Sandman Mystery Theater. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this title, Ashley?
I am familiar with it, and then I know it exists. I have not read any of it.
Sandman Mystery Theater is a favorite of mine. It is a 90s comic book that focuses on Wesley Dodds, the very first Sandman, but it is about updating him out of the golden age and actually making him a serious, it's very much a film noir, gangster noir.
Yeah.
Because Wesley Dodds doesn't have any superpowers. He just has a sleep gun. That's all he got. So that was published from Vertigo from 1993 to 1999. This title actually did a crossover where the two Sandmen that were both being published by Vertigo at the time, where they actually met. Now, Dream's imprisonment in 1916, like I told you, led to worldwide problems. Mm-hmm. Some people slept all day. Some people couldn't sleep.
Yeah, that's why I have disordered sleep. I get it.
Yes. One of those people that could not sleep was Mr. Wesley Dodds.
Oh, that's really smart.
Oh, wait a minute. Buckle up. We're not even there. This is, again, this is, in my opinion, one of the coolest retcons in comic book history. Because wow. Wesley Dodds had existed since the 1940s.
Yeah. And no one had done too much with him.
Now, between the two world wars, when Morpheus was in prison on Earth, the universe, remember, as I said, sought a replacement to fill the void left by Morpheus.
Yes.
Because of this, Wesley was imparted with some of Dream's power.
Cool.
Because they met.
Mm-hmm.
During one of Wesley's adventures, he finds the cell, or aka the snow globe, Ashley loves to call it.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
I feel like you're picking on me for not having the full context.
It's a very good visual. It's a very good visual. I find it fascinating that that's the image you struck on.
I want to say it's because of Citizen Kane.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think that's the imagery that Rosebud or whatever.
Yes. Now, because of this meeting, Wesley was imparted with some of Dream's power.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, he suffered insomnia and he had prophetic dreams of criminal activities and visions of Morpheus. And to quell this, he created an identity called the Sandman based on Morpheus's image. Now, Wesley Dodds wears a green suit, a fedora, and a gas mask. Morpheus, when he wears his helm or his crown, has a long, almost elephant-like mask that looks like a gas mask. Now, Wesley would take this tranquilizer gun, emitting a sleep gas, and he would subdue criminals at night. And only when he would subdue criminals would the insomnia stop.
Mm.
So, I think that is a fantastic retcon that changes absolutely nothing about Wesley Dodd, but actually connects to the bigger DC universe.
Yeah.
What do you think about this retcon?
I think it's incredibly smart and intriguing. And I think this type of retcon is the kind that I don't mind. You and I like to throw shade at retcons. Mm-hmm. And some characters unfortunately suffer from a lot of retcons and it winds up being to their detriment. But like, it just like there's a good way to do fan service. This is a good way to do a retcon to bolster a character who's not as involved but shares this legacy. I think this is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about Vertigo Comics. In case you're not fully familiar with Vertigo Comics, because anytime there is a conversation of Vertigo Comics, Sandman comes up.
Yeah.
Vertigo was a wing of DC Comics whose purpose was to publish comics with adult content such as nudity, drug use, profanity, and graphic violence that did not fit the restrictions of the DC main line.
And then they said, this is great. Let's do this for the rest of the line.
Yeah. Its titles consisted of company-owned comics set in the DC universe, such as The Sandman, Hellblazer, Preacher, Why the Last Man, Fables. The Vertigo branding was retired in 2020, and most of this library was transitioned to a new label called DC Black Label. But I still say, long live Vertigo.
Anyways, I agree.
The full journey of Morpheus I want to tell you about, now we're post-Vertigo comic books, I want to give you a taste of Morpheus' journey.
Okay.
Now, we talked about that this series was very hard to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Gaiman confessed that he only plotted out the first 8 issues of the series and stopped because he figured the series would sell poorly and be canceled. Well, that didn't happen.
LOL.
So eventually he wrote, he was like, I kind of think I might only have to write 4 more. So he's like, I'm just going to do 4 one-off short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, he's like, oh, it'll be canceled at 12. Then it wasn't.
Yeah.
So then he had to figure out, oh, crap, I got to keep this book going.
What do I do? Yeah.
But the short story showed him that the cells would not change if he drifted off the path of Morpheus's storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, That, to me, when the short stories happen, when the anthology of Sandman happens, where Sandman almost becomes like, here's a one-off, here's a one-off, here's a one-off, here's a six-issue story, here's a one-off, here's a one-off. That is where Sandman gets good.
Interesting.
Most people, though, don't make it that far. If you're going to read Sandman, my suggestion to you is you have to read the first 20.
Mm.
And if you can make it, because if you're not hooked by the time you get to issue 15, then nothing in the series is going to catch you.
That's very interesting to me, because if you're sort of looking at that from a macrocosmic view of like, oh, I'm a storyteller mm-hmm. and I want to tell stories in the comic book space, because very famously, the thing that you always hear is anthologies don't work. We mm-hmm. heard because that even rolls over onto television, even though something like Black Mirror is incredibly popular, right? Like Star Trek Discovery and Stranger Things were both supposed to be anthologies. And then because they were popular, the networks got scared and did not commit mm-hmm. to that. But from the macrocosmic lens, looking at like from a publishing standpoint, Sandman only gets away with the anthologies because Neil Gaiman had built an audience up to that point mm-hmm. based on Morpheus's adventures and sort of the interpersonal drama of the Endless. But it's interesting to me. I think that's a lesson that more, like, because comics is the perpetual second act, right? Mm-hmm. That more comics creators could listen to. It's like, cool, you did your 12 issues. And if you were lucky enough to not get booted, obviously it was a big difference making comics in the 80s and 90s versus now. Maybe try things that are a little weirder, a little more off mm-hmm. the beaten path. I think that's very interesting. But your advice for someone like me who wants to stick the toe back in, but also, by the way, everybody I know who's read Sandman has bailed at least one time before, mm-hmm. is to read 15 issues.
Now, just to let you know, in the 75 issues of Sandman, mm-hmm. 20 of them are standalones.
Okay, so it's a significant chunk, but it's not even a quarter of them.
No, it's a little bit more than a quarter.
A quarter's... You're right. It's not a third. Is a third. Yeah, I apologize.
It's about a third. Yes. It's about a third of the entire series yeah. are standalones.
Okay, but still, yeah. like less than half. Not a hugely significant yeah. amount.
Now, throughout the series, I mentioned that the major theme is whether, this is the theme of the entire series, mm-hmm. whether it is possible to give up a role that defines you. Dream is obsessed with his responsibilities as the Lord of Dreams, but yet he feels he cannot neglect them. His brother Destruction abandoned his role, and Destruction continues without Destruction even being around. There's another character that completely abdicates their role. And there's various mythologies and various groups that are like, let me take that over.
Yeah.
You know, this again, the series starts with Dream being imprisoned by magicians for 70 years. And while his kingdom fell apart, people kept dreaming. So he's like, I can quit my job, but he can't. He can't do it.
he was very much like, look, if I quit my job and the whole company falls apart, you didn't deserve me in the first place. And he quit his job and the company didn't fall apart. And he was like, see, you didn't need me.
Yeah.
But the universe is like, but we do. Mm-hmm.
So again, that is the theme going through Sandman. That's about the most I'm going to tell you about Morpheus. Sure. But I want to tell you about some of the other characters that I know you will encounter in the show, but are also interesting in the series. And this, the first one I know, is going to be a very pleasant surprise to Ashley. Matthew the Raven is Dream's sidekick.
Yeah, you know he's going to be voiced by?
Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew is the Raven that works for Dream, but before that, he was a human named Matthew Cable. That name sounds familiar. It is because Matt Cable was a police officer who helped Abby Arcane in the DC mm-hmm. Universe's Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. Abby Arcane, of course, is Swamp Thing's girlfriend, basically.
And Swamp Thing was a Vertigo book.
It became a Vertigo book when Sandman became a Vertigo book, because yes. at this time, Sandman was in the DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
The two characters are the same. In the comics, Matt died while he was asleep in the Dreaming, so Morpheus gave him a chance to remain in the Dreaming as his Dream Raven. Matt agreed and began his life of servitude, although most of the time is just as a companion to Dream, who kind of, you know, basically says, hey, Dream, you're doing things wrong.
I like how you gave no explanation as to why I would like this character. I like that his name is Matthew, though. That's very funny.
Ashley likes birds.
I do. I like corvids especially.
We're also going to meet the brothers Cain and Abel. And the series are going to be played by Sanjeev Bhaskar and Asim Chaudhry. Now, Cain and Abel didn't make their first appearance in the pages of Sandman. These are the brothers that were part of the EC comic horror books House of Mystery and House of Secrets.
Mm.
Straight out of these comics, these are possibly the sons of Adam and Eve from the Bible, with Cain is forever cursed to continue killing his brother, who always resurrects every time he kills him.
Neil Gaiman really loves to walk right up to that religious line and put his toe on it and think about crossing it.
Now, in the Sandman comics, Cain is invulnerable, and he and his brother are sent to live in the Dreaming thanks to Morpheus's invitation. They are also... Again, there's a lot of stuff in here that says that they might not be the literal Cain and Abel from the Bible, but they are abstract archetypes of the first murderer and the first victim. But the character's appearances almost always end with Cain getting really mad at Abel and killing him.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
Not to get into the religious discussion of it all. Uh-huh. Do you prefer the idea that they are broader constructs that we call Cain and Abel for the ease of everybody reading the book? Or do you prefer the idea that, like, no, these are the dudes or the souls of the dudes from the Bible?
Here's the answer, and I think it's the most Sandman answer I could ever give you.
It doesn't matter.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because in my book, they are Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
From the, you know, classic Bible tales. But there is a lot in Sandman that things are ideas.
Yes.
They're not, like, Dream is not a person.
Well, if Oberon and Titania are real people who exist, you know, like, if we're doing fairies
but
as well.
Are they?
Well, but I'm saying, so if we're doing fairies and treating them with the same seriousness, then everything is and everything isn't. It's that Grant Morrison of it all.
But I will say that when you read that issue,
yes,
that Oberon and Titania appear and disappear with a wisp of the wind as
well,
quickly.
Isn't that how fairies do, though? Yes.
So again, Cain and Abel, it's like they are and they aren't.
Again,
like I said, Dream is not a person. The Endless are not people.
I do think, because I'm not quite sure the tone of Sandman, having only read maybe the first 5 or 8 issues
there's all kinds of different tones.
I do think the idea that Cain keeps getting mad and accidentally killing his brother, like, that could
be... There is no accident. He purposely does it.
Well,
but yes.
That could be really funny. Mm-hmm. Like, if they play it as comedy, mm-hmm. that could be very interesting to me.
No, it's the idea of, like, what I think, like, you know, like, it's the sibling rivalry of all time, where it's just like, God, you always annoy me. Ah!
Kill you with a rock.
The next character is the Corinthian. This is Dream's sort of first villain in the series. It's going to be played by Boyd Holbrook in the series. Now, Morpheus actually created the Corinthian as a nightmare, as a person who has rows of jagged, sharp teeth where his eyes should be, and he wears his sunglasses over those eyes to hide the truth. Now, during the time that Dream disappeared, the Corinthian was able to get loose, and he became a serial killer who removed the eyes of his victims. This abuse of his power put him in Morpheus' crosshair, since he chose to be a cheap serial killer instead of a nightmare based on the darkness of the human heart. If it was my prediction, again, have not seen the Sandman trilogy series, I would guess that the Corinthian is the season one villain.
I mean, that would certainly make sense. It's interesting because Sandman is going to suffer from the same problem that Game of Thrones did, and the same problem that Rings of Power is going to be coming up against. It's a lot of mythology to have to impart in a pilot and in a first season without having characters stand and deliver. Mm-hmm. So I think focusing on one villain, even if that's maybe not super true to the first volume of the book, for ease of a television-going audience who largely has not read the series, I think that's probably a smart choice.
Now, we're going to talk about an important character and one who has already had a spinoff. We're talking about Lucifer.
Yeah.
Remember the Tom Ellis show
on
Fox and Netflix? That was technically a Sandman spinoff. Now,
do you think they ever considered Tom Ellis?
I think they probably did for the Sandman Netflix show, but I bet that there is too many legalities to cross, even though Netflix owns Lucifer.
Yeah, or he may not have wanted to. He may have wanted to go on to other things.
Lucifer is being played in the television show by Gwendolyn Christie, but here's what happens in the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most intriguing characters in Sandman is Satan himself, aka Lucifer. In Preludes and Nocturnes, which is the first arc
of
Sandman.
A great title, by the way.
Dream goes to hell to retrieve his helm, and he manages to embarrass the legendary villain, and Lucifer vows revenge. When Dream is shamed into freeing his old lover Nada in Season of Mists, he returns to hell, but this time he encounters Lucifer emptying hell. The fallen angel has cut off his wings, and he hands Dream the key and walks away to Earth. and he leaves the job of torturing the dam to someone else. He says he's bored and he's looking for something new. Now that is...
And he went right to Wall Street.
And he went to romancing ladies and solving crimes in Los Angeles. Yeah. But that is the setup of the Lucifer spinoff series. Because that cue, the beginning of Lucifer, the character's 2000 solo series, where Lucifer travels to Earth with his loyal demon lover,
yep,
Mazakim, and opens up a piano bar called Lux, and he performs every night. Now, the story for Sandman is that Dream is tasked with determining who should get the key to hell. Gods from lots of pantheons show up, basically being like, give me the key, give me the key. And in the end, two angels are sent by the Almighty as representatives, and they are assigned to the job. And one of them later begs Lucifer to return, which he laughably refuses, I assume, while singing the piano, the Billy Joel's The Piano Man on the song.
Sing me a song of the piano man. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. Now, here are some of the spinoffs that are noteworthy. There are too many to cover. A few of them I think are essential, and here are the ones that I think are essential.
Okay.
7 years after Sandman ended, Neil Gaiman wrote a one-off graphic novel follow-up called Endless Nights, which gives each of Dream's siblings a standalone story with a different big-name artist for each. It's a great read. There is also The Dreaming, which focuses on a bunch of Sandman side characters, and then there are a bunch of one-offs presented under the title The Sandman Presents, and there are also a few great miniseries about Death, because she's kind of the standout character.
Because she's so cute.
Now, if we've gotten to this point and you're still not convinced about reading Sandman.
Jason, I've gotten to this point and I'm still not convinced about reading Sandman.
How dare you, Ashley? I'm going to tell you about my favorite issue of Sandman and why. There's a quote from it. I've been up and been down and been up again. And have I learned aught? I've learned from my mistakes, but I've also had more time to commit more mistakes.
Mm.
This is from Sandman number 13 called Men of Good Fortune, where Death visits a friend, his first human friend, Hob Gadling. Now, I'm going to give you not all the details of this issue, but a big chunk of this issue, because this is my favorite issue of the series, but this is also the issue when I was reading that convinced me that I was like, oh, this is a great series.
I literally remember you reading this series and being like, I get it now.
Yes. So let me tell you the story of Men of Good Fortune.
Yeah.
Hob Gadling. He's in a bar, in a pub, in the, you know, 1300s, and he makes a deal with Dream, who is also there, and he's granted eternal life. Basically, Hob Gadling just says, you know, we only die because we think there's nothing else.
Yeah.
People give up. And he's like, I'm just going to elect to not die. And Dream at this time does not care for humans at all, but he's intrigued. And at the request of Dream, Dream goes up to Gadling and says, you know, if you agree to meet me in the same tavern 100 years from now, I have a feeling you might just not die. And so Death granted Gadling's wish. So Gadling will remain ageless and only die when he decides he's had enough of the world. But part of the arrangement is he has to show up every 100 years and he has to tell Dream about his previous 100 years. So we jump to 1489, where Hob Gadling's there. He's surprised it worked. He was like, I thought it was a dream. And he tells Dream that he's gotten into a new trade with a friend. There's a new technology he's involved called printing, and there's no possibly way it could ever last.
LOL.
We jump forward another 100 years.
1590-something?
1589. And Hob Gadling disparages an aspiring playwright that is sitting in the bar. Dream goes over to comfort this playwright named William Shakespeare and makes his own side bargain that will carry on throughout the series. A lot of this issue plays with the idea that common knowledge decrees that time makes all people wiser. However, by the story's climax, Gadling is unsure. He's been rich. He's been poor. He lived long enough to invest in Henry Tudor's shipyards and host the king and queen at his residence. But then he lost a wife.
Which queen, though?
But he lost a wife, and he lost a son, and he lost countless friends. Mm-hmm. He's learned from his mistakes, but as you said, he's made plenty of others. And he has to live with his regrets. It's implied that Gadling at one point invested with John Hawkins to promote the Atlantic slave trade, which is something that when Dream found out about this, advised him. He's like, look, my dear friend, I don't think you should do this. And he even forgot what his first wife, Eleanor, looked like. And he never had any children once the first ones died. He even had to change his name to Sir Robert Gadlin to avoid suspicion of being called a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during their fifth meeting, 500 years later, when he says something very interesting indeed. He says, he's like, I don't know if I've learned much in 500 years. I really don't think I've learned much. And he goes, I don't think people change, not in the important things. But he's like, I have an observation about you, Dream, my friend. He goes, why does Dream take an interest in Gadlin, even though he was uninterested in human? And Gadlin suspects that Dream is lonely and he wants a friend. Dream is insulted. And Dream is like, how dare you suggest that I would ever want to be friend with a meat sack like a human?
Mm-hmm.
And storms out. And Gadlin says, as Dream storms out, because when they have this meeting, they're in 1889.
Mm-hmm.
Dream goes, if I see you in 1989, it'll be because we're friends and for no other reason. So, final page of the issue, Gadlin is in an 80s business suit. It's 1989, sitting in London, waiting. And then over his shoulder, he sears, I have always heard it's impolite to keep one's friends waiting. And he turns and sees Dream. And that is the end of the issue.
I have a quick question about Hop Gadlin.
Sure.
So he gets immortality. Does he age?
No.
Okay, that was my question. Like, is he just becoming a progressively more decrepit old man?
No.
One assumes, for the sake of comic books as well, that he would not.
He always has brown hair throughout all the...
So he looks more or less...
the same.
It's like becoming a vampire.
They change his hairstyles.
Of course,
yeah. But no, he looks the same. It's basically, he's a vampire.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. And that is my favorite issue of Sandman. And to finish it here, Neil Gaiman once said in an interview on Fresh Air... none of us exist in the world that is the same world that any of the rest of us live in. The world that's important is the world behind each of our eyes, which is something that none of the rest of us can access.
Yeah.
And Dream once declares that only the phoenix arises and does not descend, and everything changes, but nothing is truly lost. And that is my lesson on Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, a book that is clearly about beginnings and endings.
But throughout. No middles.
But through and
only
through.
Endings.
No, only phoenixes. So Ashley, I'm going to ask you, based on this lesson, do you think will make another attempt at Sandman?
I do think I'll make another attempt at Sandman. What I'm, my current, at the time of this recording, struggle is there's like three high fantasy series adaptations coming out. And I would like to either revisit or visit for the first time their source material. So it's between The Silmarillion, Sandman, at least the original series, and Blood and Fire. It's what order I'm going to go through those in. If folks would be interested after I read it, maybe we'll do another Sandman-esque episode. Let us know on social media. But I have really enjoyed these. I think we kind of started these with our His Dark Materials episode, but I've enjoyed these. I'm going to tell you about the world and why it's intriguing episodes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, let's get to recommended reading. What's that?
Yes, that is where that's the thing that we cut. This is where if you go over to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, if you, like myself, are equally as intrigued by the
I don't know what you're trying to say.
Possibility of reading Sandman. Professor Jason has some well-curated recommendations that you go and pick up in your format of choice. And a little bit of support comes back our way to keep our endless lights on. Jason, I think I can figure it out, but I'm going to let you say it. What are you recommending that people pick up for Sandman?
Well, this is not going to be a normal recommend read.
Yeah.
If you're interested in reading Sandman, you absolutely should. It lives up to the hype. There's a number of ways to do so. The main series is collected in 10 trade paperbacks. They also did omnibuys and they did hardcovers. They're numbered volumes 1 to 10. Volume 1 is the hardest one to read. But once you get halfway through it, I think you can make it. Or I think you'll see it. There is a volume zero. It's called Sandman Overture. It forms a prequel to these 10 volumes. I would not recommend starting with that one. Start with volume one. There's also, if you're only going to read one book, if you're like, I'm only going to give Sandman one book, sure, I'm not going to suffer through the issue one, then I honestly would recommend volume six called Fables and Reflections, because it's one of the series that has nothing but standalone stories.
Mm.
You know, so if that's what you want to dip your toe in, but like, I'm telling you, the gold of Sandman to me is like issues 10 to like 40.
Interesting. Right in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very similar, I would say, to Fables. Fables early middle is like some of my favorite Fables mm-hmm. stuff.
Well, I will tell you that the Sandman has a big ending.
Yeah.
And it's a big ending that I feel, if you are around comic books or you have comic book nerdy friends, you might already know what it is. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you might have been spoiled on it, because it's almost like the Citizen Kane ending, where I've heard enough people talk about it that I always felt like I always knew that was going to happen.
Did you know about it before you read the ending? Did you find that your experience was lessened going in with that knowledge?
No, it wasn't lessened. It was just,
it would have nice to have been a surprise.
I knew something was going to happen, and it was just simply a matter of fact of like, oh, when is it? Okay, here it is. You know, there's also a character that factors into the ending. He's a huge part of the ending. And once that character shows up, you kind of see the end game coming.
Oh, okay, I see.
So, but that's what I would recommend. I highly, highly recommend reading this book if anything intrigued you. Again, if there were ever to be an objective list of the best comic books of all time, Sandman is probably in the top five.
I'll also put this out there. If anybody is interested in reading this and you're part of our Discord, maybe we'll do like a read along and we'll all do like a co-read in our comic book chat.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe.
I'm not committing to
anything. No, I'm saying maybe when I started, I'll be like, friends, I am starting today if you would like to read along with me. Sure. That might be fun to do. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the honor roll, Ashley.
Yes. The honor roll, which is where if you go over to Apple Podcasts or, I don't know, Hello Future People, whatever we're calling this thing, where you review stuff on iTunes, you give us 5 stars. We will read whatever you say. Literally whatever you say. If you are an international listener, please go ahead and screenshot and email it to geekhistorylesson@gmail.com. And let us know where in the world you are reviewing from, just because we can't see international iTunes, because the internet's not as global as we like to think it is. Joining the honor roll today is Sir Gleen, who says, awesome. I love this podcast. The hosts are extremely likable. Thank you. And very entertaining. Thank you. Have to give them props on the research they do for each topic each week. This is my go-to podcast for my meet cute for characters. And I didn't know about, but was interested in. Keep up the great work. P.S. Jason. I would like to know where you get most of your action figures from. Wanting to start a collection of my own. Also would like to see photos of them.
Amazon and stores. It's not an exciting answer, but that's the truth. And there's some applause for you.
Welcome, Sir Gleen. Also, we try, when we do action figure spotlights, we share all of the pictures and some extra links and stuff on the Patreon first. But if you scroll through the Instagram, and we're starting to do this, we're starting it on the Instagram. If you scroll back through the Twitter, everything that we've referenced gets photographed and put up there.
Yeah, I buy a lot of them online.
Yeah.
There's some Sandman action figures.
Yeah, do you like any of them?
No, they're not good.
Sandman, I think of more as the like ceramic statues. I've seen a lot of statues. They did do a lot.
When DC Direct was like a really big thing, they did like a line of action figures. They did a line of PVC characters, I just don't think, because Sandman has such disparate art styles.
Yeah.
It's hard for me
to find one that you would want?
Well, I don't think I would want one, because like there's not a singular image of Sandman that makes me think of Sandman, because there's just so many different looks to it, because so many different artists drew the book.
That's fair. That's totally
but this
fair.
Is my feeling about it.
Jason's also, you might have gleaned from the past chunk of episodes, big McFarlane fan right now. Really liking what they're doing with their
episodes. Don't timestamp these episodes. Is that the only honor roll we have, by the way?
It is the only honor roll. So Sir Gleen, welcome into the Teacher's Lounge. Jason, what's going on in here today? I can't wait to hear.
Well, Dream has trapped Sir William Shakespeare in our Teacher's Lounge, and he is confounded by the refrigerator. He looks at the fridge. He's been kicking it for like 3 days now and calling it a witch.
I'm just imagining Neil Gaiman kicking it.
Yes, ye old witch. TA and also other podcast host Jeremy Skinner has been almost trampled to death by William Shakespeare freaking out every time the light bulb pops on inside the refrigerator.
Well, also, I guess in fairness, right? Jeremy Skinner is currently laying in a sleeping bag with Catherine Hahn, who does famously play a witch.
Yeah.
So he's not wrong.
Well, just, again, imagine there's a refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Somebody goes for their sandwich. Every time they open it, Sir William goes, "Aah!" and like runs around the thing and just goes in circle again.
That's the worst thing that a 16th century man was doing. Mm-hmm. We're doing pretty okay.
Well,
we got things under control.
He's been trying to throw rocks at all the ladies that have walked in with their revealing clothes, and we've said,
"Bitch!"
We've said, "Sir William, please, you need to relax."
Like he wasn't married to a witch.
He was married to a witch. I think he had a couple daughters.
He had 3 children. His daughters lived. His son did not live.
There you go. See, I knew he had daughters. Yeah. Aha!
Do you know what their names are?
Nope. Titania, and Shakespeare Jr.
Titania, and Shakespeare Jr. Okay.
Yes. Don't forget, everybody out there, listen to
Susanna
our podcast.
And Judith.
Huh?
It was Susanna and Judith.
Oh, okay, thank you. To listen and to subscribe to this podcast and all of the...
Podcatchers?
There you go. I'm lost, Ashley. I'm lost in the dreamy. You took me off the side.
This is the last one we're recording in a day.
You took me off the end. Don't forget to subscribe to us in places. Subscribe to Ashley on her social media. Subscribe to me on social media. It doesn't matter where they are. Patreon.com/John. We're going to be talking about the legacy of Vertigo Comics. I don't have a hashtag stick around, but I'm going to ask you right now off the top of the dome, Ashley, what part of this lesson intrigued you the most?
Well, I'd heard the Hobgadling story before, because you basically told it to me.
Hobgadling.
When you had read it. Mm-hmm. I do think that's probably the most intriguing part of it.
I do think, I will tell you, the Shakespeare issues in The Sandman are, I actually think, good.
I don't know
as much about Shakespeare's life beyond the plays as you do.
Yes. But I'm also willing to meet this as a piece of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like in my brain, if he's like, that's the thing I got really mad at about in Shakespeare in Love. If he is writing like Romeo and Juliet and A Midsummer Night's Dreams in the wrong order, like fine, whatever.
I don't know.
It's fine.
Can I tell you what the final issue of Sandman is called? Sandman 75?
Romeo and Juliet.
No, it's called The Tempest.
Well, that is a late era play, so that would be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I've been in The Tempest. I like The Tempest. Can I ask you a stick around question?
Sure, go for it.
Who's your favorite of The Endless?
Oh.
I would feel remiss if I didn't ask you this.
I think it's Destiny.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's Destiny.
Not credited on IMDb.
Well, Destiny is kind of this guy that just wears a cloak and he carries his book. The Book of Destiny, of course.
Oh, yeah. I know what he looks like. Yeah.
And
Netflix, if you're casting, I would love to play this part.
He's big.
Uh-huh.
He's like massive. He doesn't really appear, but it's like one of these things where there are some scenes in The Sandman where they get all of the Endless together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like when they do it early on in the series, they kind of make a deal where like, this is the first time. It's kind of like the Gathering of the Ents in Lord of the Rings. They're like, this is the first time in an age that we've done this.
Like, you're like, it's like the Ents.
And it's kind of funny because all the other Endless like fight with each other. They all like snipe. It's like a family dinner.
Yeah.
And then the minute Destiny walks in, they all go, he's here. Yes. What do you want, Dad? What?
It's like when Zeus shows up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, like Destiny like shuts them up.
Yeah.
And in fact, too, it's funny. If you know the ending of Sandman, I'm not going to tell you what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you know where it's going, when you read it, read all of Destiny's lines because he tells every character what's going to happen to them.
Okay.
He does. He literally says to Dream's face exactly what's going to happen to
him. His name is Destiny.
Yep. But what happens is that all of the Endless don't believe him.
Well, that's another...
Because he's their brother.
That's another classic mythology trope because Neil Gaiman, like, as turfy as she is, J.K. Rowling, like... J.R. Tolkien is a classicist. That's why he wrote the Norse mythology collection. And like, he obviously has such a strong framework, which has come out in his most popular works, I think. Even something like Anansi Boys is like based on mythology. Is that And horror movies love to really hit this on the head, but just because you're told what you need to know doesn't mean you're able to act on it. That's a very Greco-Roman classic, ignoring prophecies kind of thing.
This, yeah, The Sandman, it's a series of feeling and philosophy. It's not a simple series. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the series is, what you will get out of the series is what you put into it.
It honestly, then, this is going to sound super shitty, and I don't mean it to sound as bad as it's going to. That I'm surprised it's that popular, if it's that difficult.
I think because you're saying that you think it's too smart for like the modern audience.
I think the reason that comics lean on the tropes that they do is because I think a lot of people go for it for escapism and not to be challenged. We know Batman's going to throw the villain back in Arkham at the end. So I'm always impressed and intrigued when something that's actually has a measure of depth to it becomes popular as well.
Here's what I think, why I think Sandman worked and why it's popular. I don't think Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, if published now, would work.
I agree.
I think it would have been canceled.
I agree.
But I think in 1989 or 88, excuse me, we were on the back wave of comics entering their quote unquote dark age.
Yeah. With the bronze.
We just had Watchmen. We just had the Dark Knight Returns. Yeah. We had been reading for a couple of years at that point. The Saga of the Swamp Thing by Alan Moore.
Very dark. Awesome. But yep. Dark.
And I think that The Sandman showed up and kind of said to everybody like, oh, this can be more than a funny book, as you know, to use that term. This can be more than just spandex idiots punching you. This can be true literature. I think Sandman is what got comic books into bookstores.
Interesting.
I really think it's Sandman.
It was certainly part of it.
And yeah. I think the reason why it's so famous now is because it has been built up like a Citizen Kane, like a Wizard of Oz. Like now everybody, when you talk about Sandman, everybody's like, yeah, one of the best books of all time.
Yeah. And, but Sandman also, it touches on the burgeoning goth culture, right? Of the late 80s, early 90s.
Well,
a lot of people I knew in high school who owned Sandman, I wouldn't have thought of as geeky people. I would have thought of them as kind of like punky goth people.
Mm-hmm. And that it is definitely alternative.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's pretty safe for now. I mean, there's trans characters in it for a book, you know, published in the early 90s. Like there's trans characters, a lot of gay characters in it.
Which has actually been reflected in the casting in really interesting ways.
But I will say that, I don't know. Like, I think.
Yeah. And it's not to say that any of the genres that we talked about earlier aren't worthy either. Like there are superhero books that are like Superman Smashes the Klan is literature.
Mm-hmm. I will also say too that there is some pretty dated art sometimes.
I think the coloring actually, the style of coloring date and the color palette dates it more than the line work.
But I can get past that with The Sandman because The Sandman is a series that is about philosophy and is out there. Yeah. So I'm willing to like go with its surreal and not, it is not a classically drawn comic book.
Yes, yeah.
It is. There is a lot of Sam Keith, the man who created the Max for Image Comics. You've seen his art in the Hulk his Hulk is all over in berserker teeth. He draws the first five issues of this book.
Yeah, it's wild.
It is all and over
I
the
mean,
place.
I mean that as a compliment.
Yes. Yeah. So there you go. There's The Sandman.
There we go.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you read The Sandman. We hope you enjoyed the new television series coming out. We didn't work on it, but we hope you enjoyed it anyway. Thank you so much for listening. I am Jason Dream Hunter Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
All right, class. I will meet you here in 100 years for a podcast. None of you will die as long as you agree to listen to this podcast again. In 100 years. Okay. See you in 2122.